This is Patient Theory 2, Unit 2, Part 6, Burn Care. So, first and foremost with burns, when you've lost your skin barrier, you've lost a couple of things. You've lost that thermoregulatory barrier. So patients with burns are at higher risk of hypothermia, for example. And you've also lost that hermetic seal that protects us from infection. So the purpose of wearing personal protective equipment and using sterile technique as much as possible is to protect the patient from us, right? That patient's at a much higher risk of infection. That patient, in the course of their treatment in hospitals, at high risk of a localized infection, systemic infection, sepsis, septic shock. So we want to minimize their exposure to us in the field. If you take a burn patient to one of the larger teaching hospitals, what you'll find is that everyone who goes into that resuscitation room, that emerge room, will have a gown, will have gloves, goggles, and a mask, right? So you need to put on, at the very least, not necessarily a gown, but you need to have gloves, goggles, and a mask to protect the patient from you, right? You don't want to breathe on their burns. You don't want to touch their burns. You're going to avoid putting gloved hands, because they're non-sterile gloves, on the burn areas. You're going to be handling sterile dressings and putting the sterile dressings on the burn areas and irrigating those areas. We're not going to be as finessed and as good at it as the nurses and physicians in the hospital, but we're going to do our best to minimize any contamination for that patient. So now, I'll just tell you personally, I'll forego the N95 mask and just wear a surgical mask, because it's a lot more comfortable and I think probably protects the patient sufficiently from my droplets. In terms of airway management of burns, if you've got airway burns, I would use an OPA, but if I was worried that the tongue was so swollen that the OPA might just push the tongue further back, I might forego using an OPA and just try to go with bag valve mass ventilation without OPA, or use an NPA instead. So high flow oxygen is ideal in a spontaneous breathing patient, and if they don't meet the criteria for an OPA. And ventilatory support would be just basic PPV with a bag valve mask device. Cardiovascular management, so we want to get IV access, maybe en route, maybe not necessarily on the scene, but if there's time, we'll get one line at the scene, maybe two lines, second line in the back of the ambulance. And remember, the fluid loss is slower than from traumatic blood loss. When I say trauma, I mean blunt trauma, penetrating trauma, that sort of thing. So consequently, fluid resuscitation is slower. If you're dealing with a burn patient who's hypotensive at the scene, as I said before, they're probably bleeding internally. There's some source of bleeding rather than an issue with swelling and third spacing of fluids. So solution of choice is really Ringer's lactate, but most paramedic services, in fact, I think all paramedic services, land paramedic services, still carry normal saline. Hopefully that'll change to Ringer's lactate later. Ringer's lactate is a more electrolyte balanced solution, and it also contains lactate, which is converted by the liver into bicarb, so it combats acidosis. Normal saline has a pH of about 5.4, so it's a very acidic solution. And 4 or 5 liters of normal saline will lead to a hyperchloremic acidosis. So normal saline is not a great solution. Why we still carry it is beyond me. I don't know. Sterile water is good for irrigating burns. I just find the bottles empty so quickly, and then you're left with nothing, right? So I prefer a liter bag of saline with IV tubing and just a little basic hose, and you're going around the body. Like you might use big bottles of sterile water initially to soak the patient down. So we irrigate for 20 to 30 minutes. I've heard people say that you can cool the burns in 5 to 10 minutes, and anything beyond that is not useful. But patients will tell you that it feels better when you're continuously irrigating. And so, but just be aware that there's always that risk of hypothermia, right? So if you get a burn patient in the cold and there's already risk of hypothermia, when you get them in the back of the ambulance, keep the ambulance reasonably warm and just continue to irrigate them. So once burns are cooled, we cover them with dry dressings to prevent hypothermia. But here's reality. Rarely, unless you're working in a rural area, are you going to have time to irrigate the burns and then put dry dressings on. So what I would do is put dressings on, irrigate them, and then maybe put a blanket over top to minimize hypothermia. Look at it this way. You don't want them to be cold to the point where they're shivering, because if they start to shiver, they're generating heat, right? And you don't want a burn patient generating heat. So you got to keep talking to them. Like, are you cold? Are you okay? Are you warm enough? Is there an area that, you know, if their feet aren't burned and they're cold, put a warm blanket on the feet, right? Put a warm blanket on the head. Now, we don't use any special formulas or potions for burns. For whatever reason, every year or so, somebody comes up with this idea of this new burn gel. And there's some nice stuff out there. There's some water-soluble gels and things like that you can put on burns that relieve the burning sensation. But every year someone comes with that, up with some idea, and sometimes it even gets put on the ambulance, and a week or two later it comes off the ambulance because the service consulted with the burn unit, and the burn unit says, please don't put anything on that burn. Don't put creams, don't put special dressings containing anything, just put dressings on it with saline, that's it. Because it creates a problem for the burn unit to clean and debride those burns, and you know, they may have to remove whatever chemical that you put on the burns and before they can provide proper burn care. So we don't use any special solutions. Hydrogel is just one example, and hydrogel is it's a beautiful product. It's like a water-based gel, and you put it on and people feel great with it. Like, it relieves the burn pain, but the burn unit didn't want it, so unfortunately. Maybe they'll come up with something the burn unit approves in the future. In terms of resuscitation, so there's humidified O2 if that's even possible, a couple of IVs if it's a significant body surface area burn. For analgesia, let's not worry about that, but because unfortunately there's nothing you can give as a primary care paramedic. For fluid resuscitation, we need to estimate the body surface area burn. If you suspect injuries to the lungs, you might add another 10%. So eschars, we look at threats to limb, threat to the chest, any kind of encircling burns might compromise circulation, so that would factor into your decision between whether it's CTAS 2 or CTAS 1, but rarely will you be criticized if you go lights and sirens with a burn patient in the hospital. That's an escharotomy. We looked at those before. Some more escharotomies of the chest. It looks horrible, right? You'd think that's got to be extremely painful for the patient, but they don't feel a thing because these are third-degree burns, right? So the doc just takes a scalpel very gently on the skin and just opens it up. It looks terrible, but it's quite effective. There's another guy with an escharotomy across his chest and up his right arm. Inside of his right arm. I would consider calling for the helicopter in situations where there's patient entrapment, which means there's going to be a delay in getting them out and extricated. So a car fire, for example, where they're trapped, and it's going to take you a while to get them out. If they require some sort of definitive airway management, significant fluid resuscitation, they've got eschars. But again, only if there's a delay getting them off the scene. So for example, if a farmer is a couple of hundred meters into a field and something caught fire and he sustained a burn out there, it's going to take a long time for the local paramedic crew to get their stretcher through the cornfield to this guy, get him on the stretcher, get him out of the cornfield. That might be a good example of calling for a helicopter. Or, you know, an island call, which is difficult access, or a car crash where there's entrapment, that sort of thing. So burn units, let's just skip this, but because we don't have a trauma triage guideline for going straight to a burn unit, so it's not something you're going to do. So you can just look at that. Oh, I thought there was more to this. I think there's a section, separate section on fluid resuscitation. So I'll have to look that over. There's a formula for that. Maybe we'll talk about it next class.